So we are sounding the Om as we are producing, we are augmenting the image as we sound the Om. He sounds the sacred word. Now that is definitely the Om, taking up the note of the ego as much as he can understand it and as he believes he hears it. And I'll bet that as this Om is sounded, whatever the ego is saying is coming through stronger. So I would say the Om increases the clarity of what the ego is sounding. And sending it forth to swell the egoic sound, which also starts building this point upon the mental plane. So three things are happening. He is, the egoic sound is going forth, he's hearing it, he's sounding the Om, which in turn swells the impact of the egoic sound, and meanwhile, the building, visualizing, strengthening process of the point of light is occurring on the mental plane. So it's a kind of a triple activity in which we could practice being involved in it. Swell. Swell means to get bigger, you know. Uh-huh. Swell up, you know. Usually swell is not such a nice word.
Yeah.
Because we talk about being swollen, so our face gets swollen, something gets swollen, and, you know. Mm-hmm. That's how we usually use the word. The old way of swelling the sound is a kind of an old thought form.
Expanding the sound.
Yeah. Back in the 18th century, they did a lot of swelling. And then later in the 20th century, you became a swell. That's really swell, isn't it?
Swell.
It's a step up from swill. Okay. And so it's a triple activity. With the sounding of the Om, synchronously he visualizes the proposed thought form, which is for the body egoic purposes, and pictures it in detail. Now, you know, it might also be possible, when you're picturing this thought form, to hear the Om internally, without actually doing it with your voice. But sometimes I find that the voice, if you get into a good rhythm and, you know, you're not caring too much attention, it actually sets a field in which a lot of clarity and strength can arise. So I find myself doing this all the time. If I have to visualize the members of the Moria Federation, for instance, or the faculty group, I always use an Om as a sub-stratum, kind of like a bass tone, to accompany the visualization and strengthen whatever thought I may be directing toward the different members, like, do your papers. that kind of thought. What did you say?
Finish the course.
Oh, my gosh, that's a unique thought. Wow. It's amazing how telepathy works, you know. Okay. We must not forget that we are here dealing with those conscious meditations which produce magical results. Okay. When this process is proceeding under law, in order the focal point of energy gains strength, it's Om-fed, it's swelled. See that swell. Swell. Its light and fire makes itself felt. It becomes, in the occult sense, visually objective. And they kind of have to wonder about a person who's giving a message out of the physical plane, when all of the adherents that are interested in that message gather around. Mm. I bet they can also obscure the original message, you know. So you have to find a way to...
Yeah. That's one of the reasons for the silence when you're doing this work.
Mm-hmm.
There's that, I don't know if it's said directly in here, but it's kind of like an occult thing that I've learned through various trainings. You hold silence for a while, it's something that you're working through. You don't speak it to anybody.
Sure, but I'm even just talking about a lecturer. I'm just talking about a person who... I'm talking very objectively.
Right.
See, yeah, so I'm talking about all the people who gather around the teaching and with their own many thought forms distort the teaching.
That's true, too.
It is a possibility. Of course, you just have to do it. You have to live through that period of distortion and they gradually refine their reception of what the note may be. think of all the distorted thought forms around any significant teaching, like DK's teaching or any of the teachings that comes forth in purity, and then people bring their own minds to it, and then the thought form process, you know, does not resemble the original at first. Eventually it does with adequate study. Okay, attracts the attention of the lesser builders through its radiation and warmth, its active vibration, its sound or note, its light. So in a minute we're going to hear, you know, sound, light, vibration, and the form blend and merge. So these are the factors here. The only additional one is radiation and warmth. The elemental workers of responsive capacity, they have to be responsive to that particular note. See, you know, all kinds of different elementals respond to different notes, and we're talking about the ones that can respond to this note. And they are, as far as I can understand right now, they are on the mental plane. Are gathered and swept into the radius of the force of the note and begin to gather round. This is the, should we say, this is the future substance of the thought form. The intended form begins to be apparent due to clear visualization, and tiny life after tiny life takes its place in the construction. It's a bit like building in a morphogenic field. It's a bit like building a physical body in a morphogenic field. A physical body in a morpho, morphogenic field.
First word, like, isn't it?
Yeah, it
you know, it just occurred to me, we're not consciously invoking these elementals. They're being attracted.
It's automatic.
Yeah, and it's automatic. Probably through the attraction of the own and the visual. I'm thinking, what is actually pulling them in?
The
some kind of magnetic attraction.
Sure, and even the own will pull them in, but also just the visualized thought form, they'll be attracted to that, because we've also been told to visualize while we're oming, and that's creating a magnet. I'm sorry.
I'm sure that then when we do that, that we consciously om, and we work with this thought form, then we change the elemental, fire elemental to deva.
Mm-hmm. Okay, it's certainly.
Because if the om brings the fire, solar fire, and the soul into matter, and that's why also those elementals will be transformed.
Yeah. The higher our original conception, and the more we can really receive what the ego is sending us, the higher will be the types of devas on the mental plane.
I imagine he's seeing this, he's watching this kind of reservoir or something else like
Yes.
that. How do you think, I'm trying to think, do I feel this part of it? I'm not sure I do. How would one experience this gathering of the elemental life around the thought form?
Maybe a fuller sense of the thought form. Maybe the thought form becomes richer, more complex, more variegated, like that.
More detailed?
Yes, I think so, yeah. I think
stronger.
What's that?
Stronger and more detailed, you know, and more harmonic.
It's like the precipitation of these little forms around it, bringing it more and more concrete.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, and it's still on the mental plane, remember. This is, it has not descended yet.
Yeah.
So, okay, and when he says step by step or place by place, what does he say? And tiny life after tiny life takes its place in construction. So it's just a sense of fullness, a growing sense of fullness of the thought form. Growing sense of fullness of the thought form. And you know, we're told there is a morphogenic field, there is a etheric field before the actual fetus begins to grow. And then all of these different physical elementals take their appropriate place within that field, and there's the fullness of the fetus. I think it's a straight analogy here. You know, we just think about half-baked and half-cooked. You know, got a great idea, though. You know, whereas, you know, the sense of fleshing it out, filling it out, until this person has really thought this through. we tend to say.
Well, Michael, that's, you know, maybe covered in one of the other rules when you get to it, but what I was just thinking when you said flesh it out, it kind of home, but, you know, there gets to be a point, at least in what little as I've been able to do in visualizing stuff and trying to make it happen, is that feeling gets involved too.
Mm-hmm.
You know, at a certain point,
exactly,
the vision is, the clearer it is, the less you start to feel it. And maybe it's desire or something else. Something begins to grow, and you connect with it through feeling as well.
Yeah, exactly. And that will take us with rule 7, 8, 9, and 10.
Mm-hmm.
And 11. 5, yeah, exactly. Because then it begins to want to move towards the physical plane because you really feel the necessity of this thought form appearing. You want to do it. The desire is, it becomes vitalized by desire.
Apparently, you know, this is what's often what's meant in what's going on. About this higher, the sex energy used in a higher way,
mm-hmm.
you know, in a higher creative way.
Yes. What did you say? A sexual use or
sex energy?
Sex energy.
Or sex energy?
Yes. When it's transmuted
sure.
to a higher
sure.
frequency.
Yes. Well, we're learning an awful lot about the activation of the throat center and the pineal gland through the conservation or redirection of sex energy. It basically is going to bring out the higher cities. So, you know, it's all a Libran kind of balance here, but for people who finally go whole hog, you know, they really want every energy that that is produced in the latent fires to feed the pineal gland. And that's a whole Taurus type of dynamic. And, you know, basically, people like the Dalai Lama and others of his caliber are the result of that kind of energizing. You know, they haven't squandered the vital force, and therefore, you know, they have the full higher creativity as a result of that. So anyway, yes.
Bill was talking. You know, when you said you're beginning to feel it, I think what I was sensing from you is that you're already feeling the thought form with your mm-hmm. mind.
Yes.
So it's not the emotional feeling that you empower the spirit.
Yeah, that was something that happened.
Okay, well, maybe some support with tangibility and so forth.
Yeah.
Usually the word feeling is associated, you know, with the astral vehicle, but yeah, there is mental impression and so forth. Okay, well, we'll be in a position to assess all of that as we take it step by step. Right now we are fleshing out, without flesh, fleshing out on the mental plane, the thought form. The result of this coherency. Now remember, one of the names of the second ray, the ray of attractive coherency. And we are definitely involved in a second ray activity here. We have sounded a note, and the ingathering has occurred, and the place taking and the form building. Second ray, a major form building ray. Is that the inner light becomes veiled, its brilliancy dimmed, just as the inner light of the ego in its shadow, the personality, or thought form man, is similarly dimmed and hidden. And we are the lower man, we are the veil upon the inner ego. As one looks at us, you know, it's possible you might just see the personality. People who are more acute can see through this veil and see the soul. How good are we at doing this? See, this is really a big thing. You know, when you look at people, do you see the personality or do you see really what's veiled? Yeah.
In working on the rebirth presentation, I came across a quote from Annie Besant. She talks about as the soul initiates the next incarnation, that the clouds of mental matter obscure the soul. So it's that same idea of the dimming as the denser material comes around.
It's moths and the flame, you know, in a way. But what we have to do is render translucent and eventually transparent all the lives that have gathered around the flame. And this is basically what a master does if he trains us. You know, we get eager, we come around and say, teach us, master, and we're very opaque. And gradually, as we continue to learn from the Master, his light shines through us, translucence and then transparence. Well, one of the things DK asks us to do is to become transparent. Before we start directing energy anywhere, he says, please be a transparency for the inner energy of your own soul before you even start using the third ray method of targeting the destination for the energy. So transparency, well, you said in the whole economic field it's a big issue, and it's probably a big issue for all of us. In other words, in one of the rules of the road, he says three things a pilgrim must avoid: the wearing of a hood, a veil which hides his face from others. And then he's supposed to carry with him a lamp which casts its rays upon his heart and shows his fellow men the nature of his hidden life. So, you know, transparency, revelation, non-veiling. At the same time, the hermetic secrets, that's it. You don't get them unless you deserve them. You know, their lips are sealed, and what goes on in the inner sanctum is not going to be communicated unless you are a brother of equal degree and have the vibration necessary to receive it. So it's again a kind of a paradox. You reveal yourself, and yet you conceal what must be concealed. It's always a Libran process in a way. Right now we can go to the white magic part of this discussion and see if more is revealed. The energy circulates, the point of light, the product of the labors of the four waxeth and groweth. The myriads, lots of them, I guess, gather round its glowing warmth until its light recedes, its fire grows dim. Then shall the second sound go forth. And it sounds like, to me, whatever the second sound is, the om sounded by the man, by the magician, structures the substance which has been drawn in and places it rightly. Because, you know, the om is a very interesting thing. It's a word of structure. It's the word of the soul. It carries with it divine geometry. Om carries divine geometry. In other words, it is the design of the sound. And when we sound the om, pure reason occurs. From the om comes pure reason and the right, the design of any relationship. So om is right relationship. Not rubris, sorry. Okay, om is right relationship. So when we sound the om, things go where they're supposed to go. Impurities go out, better stuff comes in, and things are moved into a loving relationship. Om moves all constituents into a loving relationship. Okay. So if we sound the om, that which the soul seeks to convey is better heard and better built in lower matter. So the om is like a guarantee that what we're trying to shape up on the mental plane will actually assume soul shape. Assume soul shape through the om. The Tibetan gave Alice Bailey a meditation. I've got to dig it out sometime because I mean to for you all to see it, with 17 ohms.
Wow.
Yeah, something like that. I think it's 17. It's just an ohmful meditation. And very, very powerful. And
what was it for?
Yeah, I really need to restudy it. What the purpose of it was, but he gave her meditations too. She was DRS, you know, and detachment, serenity, or something like that. And no, detachment, rest, and serenity.
Mm-hmm.
Rest. Yes, so he was a Gemini, another sleepless Gemini at work.
These meditations DK gave her are in letters on occult meditation?
No, not exactly. I've got some that are not in there, but the really important ones are in there. But this kind of meditation could be given to a group like this, you know, if it could be. I don't think they wanted all of those meditations in the books. Actually, what I understand is that the people had the choice of whether they wanted their meditations in the book or not. Yeah.
But and some he definitely indicates shouldn't be.
Yeah, some maybe not, maybe not. But it was also left to the people whose instructions were given. All of them agreed to have their instructions given. Some meditations were not in there. But this one would be interesting, I think. And you know, believe me, 99% of the material, 99.9% of the material is in our possession. And we're probably going to be effective at assimilating 10%. So we've got more on our plate than we can possibly assimilate. But you know how it is, it's always the other thing, you know, the grass is greener somewhere. And then we ignore what's given to us. If we could even assimilate the 14 rules, I mean, or just think of it, 14 rules for disciples, 14 rules for applicants, 15 rules for magic, the 7 laws of the soul, what am I missing? That would be enough to build us into something, wouldn't it? I mean, you know, like he says, I've given you more than you can ever assimilate.
Rules
I think
of the
that.
Road.
Rules of the road, yeah, all that. When it comes to building ourselves, we've got hundreds of years of material to work with, and we're now going to be given a third installment. And that that'll probably be quite amazing. Okay. All right. Soul light and body light. Soul light and body light. Let's see. Where did I do this with other people? Whoa. Well, this may be the beginning. I just put that in as a marker. I don't think I did this with the other group. And it's a mere 20 pages. Well, that'll take forever. But let's just see. In these rules for magic, the laws of creative work are embodied, and the means whereby man can function as an incarnated soul. Are you functioning as an incarnated soul? Or as an intelligent animal beneath the third initiation. I think we become human at the third degree. We overcome Mars, right? Okay. They do not deal primarily with the rules governing man's development. Incidentally, of course, much can be learned in this connection, for man grows through creative work and understanding. But this is not the price. Isn't that good? Man, in other words, if you want to grow, be creative. Which doesn't necessarily mean be artistic, but, you know, certainly create something on the physical plane which you have to attend to and which is of value. The throat center is very important here. But this is not the primary objective of the teaching. Through the gradually growing synthesis of the meditation process carried on by the soul on its own plane and that of the aspirant, the man manifests in the physical brain a point of light. Now, this is interesting. The point of light, the product of the labors of the four. It may manifest in the physical brain, and this will be the seed of the light in the head. But it's also manifesting on the mental plane. So more than one point of light is emerging here. Light ever signifies two things, energy and its manifestation in form of some kind. That's a potent statement. For light and matter are synonymous terms. And this is the whole Einsteinian formula. Matter and energy light are equivalent. Okay. And this is Kabbalah too, the whole universe is light. Frozen light. Okay. Light ever signifies two things, energy and its manifestation in form of some kind, or light and matter are synonymous terms. So this is the this is the third ray revelation, I think, is one way to put it. We're dealing with the third aspect, matter, energy, and light. The thought of the man and the idea of the soul have found a point of rapport, and the germ of a thought form has come into being. That's well said. The thought of the man and the idea of the soul. Notice how he distinguishes those two points. We can create thought forms, we don't create idea forms. Okay. This thought form, when completed, will embody as much of the great plan on which the hierarchy is working as the man can vision, grasp, and embody on the mental plane. Okay. This thought form, when completed, will embody as much of the great plan on which the hierarchy is working as the man can vision, grasp, and embody on the mental plane. Well, okay. I think there are specific kinds of thought forms for specific tasks, and then there is our world view. Okay? So we have, I think we have a world view thought form. Do you have one? If someone said to you, what is your philosophy? And that would have been what the soul conveys, what you've been building, and it is a very large thought form. It's a ninth house thought form. It's a Jupiterian thought form. It's how you conceive of the whole. But then there are specific parts and specific little forms that have to be created within that. This, in the early stages of a man's aspiration, in his first steps along the path of discipleship, and for the first two initiations, is covered by the word service. Okay. Now notice what the first and second initiation are for him. Part of the aspirant's life. In other words, you are an aspirant, definitely an aspirant, a probationary initiate, and a disciple, even though you are first and second degree initiate. You are a disciple. So disciple as a first and second degree initiate. Okay, so this is preliminary stuff. If we are initiate of the second degree, even though that may place us only one life away from the fourth degree, we are still an aspirant. And it's still early days. In other words, our highest achievements are really outside, are just on the threshold of real achievement as far as the hierarchy is concerned. So what is that? So basically he's saying, what is your thought form of service? And I suppose each one of us has a thought form of how we are intended to serve, how we do serve and will serve, how we could serve better. We have not necessarily fulfilled our full thought form of service, have we? What I would like to do and think I should do is this, and what I have done is somewhat more contained, perhaps.
Right. And I think it can grow as our life goes on, too.
Yeah. Our sense of what could be accomplished,
right.
And ever our reach exceeds our grasp. You know. So it's always just a little bit out of our grasp. But yes, it's definitely growing. Like I have, I'm sure you do too. I have all kinds of ideas about what could be done, and I even translate them to myself as what should be done. And then I look at time and energy and money and all of these physical plane things, and then just try harder, hopefully more intelligently. It's you can try harder and just exhaust yourself if you don't use intelligence.
Yeah.
Or haven't you noticed that, perhaps?
And on top of that, intelligence, yeah, is one thing. But you could be a really hard worker intelligently, but without soul input, without the magical power to put it all together beyond intelligence.
Okay.
You need to, in fact, energize on the astral plane other people to also have the vision, etc. It's got to be more than just intelligence.
Sure. But I guess what I'm thinking here is that we're in the magical process and soul contact has been made, so there is this right motive is with us. But then how do you, like the true initiate, manage to accomplish far more in a smaller unit of time than can the average individual? And this calls for some master R abilities, the kind of third ray abilities which can express as the glamour of efficiency or can actually be real efficiency.
We remember how Dagen says that when disciple contacts the real one can...
The average person contacting the will prematurely or Shambhala force will... damage himself, and the disciple doing the same will destroy himself.
Have you ever said that when the energy comes, you have so much energy, you can just work and work and work and work. Mm-hmm. And that is how the solar fire burns these little elementals. It just simply burns it, and then we can destroy the body.
Yeah, that's right.
But it's yeah. really difficult place where you could, you feel that you could continue, but...
Well, on forever.
Yes,
the form
but the yes, body has
other
to
ideas.
Be... that you have body.
Yeah.
Because you're more transparent, you're allowing more energy through.
Yeah.
Say you're burning the nuts.
Yeah.
It's a bit like mountain climbers, you know, I'm no great shakes at this, but they go up to a certain altitude and then they come down.
Yeah.
Then they go up again and then they come down. This acclimation or climatizing or whatever.
Mm-hmm.
I think there is a lot of that when we're dealing with the spiritual fire. Yeah.
There's a wonderful idea in NS about this thought form that the soul creates for a life of service, and not just this life, but mm-hmm. for future lives. The entire path to mastery is created by the soul, and
yes.
embodies many lives that all work together to fulfill this
mm-hmm.
one unique purpose that the soul has.
And then for me, that would require a little, what I would call solar angelic input. Someone, he says, the soul is not handicapped as we are, but sees, he says, the last several lives and the next several lives ahead, so it has some sort of sense of the progression. He didn't mention the possibility of recapturing them all, but in the Buddha tradition, he seems to have done that, you know. But only the relevant ones, and sort of sees where we are in the process. And if we ever tune in with the soul's meditation on that, maybe we really get a sense of where we're going as a personality.
When we were in the workshop with David Spangler on the weekend, he was talking about this experience, which I think is a good analogy of that. And we were talking about experiences people have where there's a great deal or a higher dimensional seed there. And he was talking about an experience he had when he was 17 years old. And he's still unpacking that.
Yeah.
That in an instant, this experience, which has to be unfolded over many, many, many years.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. This is the relationship between Uranus and Saturn.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
Uranus comes totally packed, instantaneous, and in a fused ideational condition. And Saturn unpacks it in time and sequence.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
And it's like the difference between purpose and plan.
And Aries and Libra.
Yes, it is, with Aries being the whole idea, ruled by the sun, exalted.
And Uranus.
Right. Mm-hmm. And Uranus. I see what you're saying. Okay, because I was going to go to Saturn.
But do you remember, has it happened to you that when you were young, you were waiting for those disco times or party times, and they would last and last. And if you knew that you have to work, that I hope that it's only a few hours. And now it's totally opposite. That if one has to go to some party or some, you know, yes, one thing, I hope that it's very short.
So I can work.
Yes.
Right?
Yeah. It's so
disco consciousness, yes. Okay. Okay.
Now it's yippee work.
Spoken like a true Capricorn. Yes. Okay. So the thought form of service and the thought form of the greater service, the real contribution of the particular soul. But you know, did you have some meditations in the class trying to visualize that? Because that would be fun to do, you know. Just, I mean, it would be good to kind of share our sense at some point of our next incarnation. On the other hand, okay. Did you lose your right eye? Okay. All right, so here we go. So thought form of service. He grasps gropingly at first the idea of the unity of the life and its manifestation as the brotherhood existing between all forms of that divine life. And by the way, DK tells us that brotherhood is a monadic realization. known by the monad. So it's a fact of life and not something that has to be developed. It just has to be brought through because it already exists. Right, yes.
Okay.
Yes.
The one life existing, the brotherhood existing between all forms
of that divine life.
How are we going to deal? How am I going to deal with roaches?
Roaches.
How should I approach this?
Well, work on humanity first. And the roach will evolve. There's a place for the roach.
There is?
There is a place for the roach.
So as a white magician, we cannot kill roaches. Is that correct?
I'm not sure about that. Let's just see.
Because I feel horrible killing roaches, but you know.
I don't. But okay.
You get first ray.
A roach is a cockroach skittering around, carrying disease. I guess we just have to look at the conditions and what, you know, DK even says that humanity should not survive if it doesn't straighten up.
Mm.
You know, because we're carrying some diseases here for the planet that should not be sustained.
Yeah.
So we have to look, we have to find the purpose of each being, and so far we don't know that. But I think the people with the ecological consciousness that are trying to preserve certain species, I think they have some of this, although in the attempt to preserve certain species forms, they may be stopping a natural change. You know. So anyway, we won't get into this whole thing about the Jains and all that. Can they even breathe because they're killing something when they breathe it into their nose? You know, we can't, I don't think we can go that far, nor should we get into that discussion at this moment, but knowing the true value and place of all things, this is the manual. This is what he does. He understands what place every form has. And by the way, the manual does destroy some forms at some times. Not that we take that to our own prerogative, but we have to understand in a non-sentimental way, what is the place of every life, what is the place of its form, into what form should it be sustaining its attention, toward what form should it be moving, and we don't know that yet, but one day we will.
Hiroshima.
Well, that's a tough one.
Yes, but then DK said that, you know, 100,000 lives or whatever forms, and we attach too much importance to the form.
I know, it's considered so heartless, but...
Yes, that's a tough one.
It's tough, but we can justify it, and I'm sure he says it with full heart. No, you know, sometimes when destruction comes, DK talks, you know, you made the compilation, the eternally lovely secret of death.
Yeah.
And, you know, Robert has death, the great adventure and all that, and there's a certain sense about moving on out of a confining form, which is a great liberation, not appreciated by the presently confined form.
Yeah.
You know how it is that people have been in prison for 30 years, don't want to leave.
Yeah.
And you even read about suicides occurring because they're presented with the possibility of freedom. We don't want to be in that position because greater things lie ahead, you know. And Master Moria tells us that every moment is better than the last. And every moment is better. So we have to have a certain courage to change the scene. Because there's nothing but life and the changing of scenes. All right. This subjective ideal gradually leads to an appreciation of the way in which this essential relationship can work out practically, brotherhood, practicality, especially in the third decade of Aquarius. About 1,500 years from now, 1,600 years from now, we begin the Venus decade of Aquarius, the true age of brotherhood. This can be seen finding its expression in the great humanitarian efforts in the organizations for the relief of human and animal suffering and in worldwide efforts for the betterment of the internal relations of nations, religions, groups. Okay. Let's see what else. Enough human units have now contacted the hierarchical plan so that it may be safely concluded that the collective brain of the human family, that entity we call the fourth kingdom of nature, is susceptible to division. So we're talking about soul impression on the human brain, and has fashioned its lighted form on the mental plane, so the thought form of solution, collusion, that's true too. So I never know what my computer's going to type. All I have to do is put a couple of letters in there, and I'm going to get a miraculous new form. Okay. Later, the thought of service and of self will be found inadequate, and a more suitable form of expression will be found, but this suffices for the present. Okay. This thought form created by the aspirant is brought into being by the focused energies of the soul and the reoriented energies,
focused
energy soul and the forces of the personality. Yeah. Right. Okay. The thought form created by the aspirant and by humanity eventually, after World War II especially, you know, this was really prominent. Human planning is the first indication that the will aspect is emerging and so forth. The focused energy of the soul, the reoriented downward gazing soul, and the reoriented forces of the personality looking up for a change. This is a picture that's covering three stages. Let's look. One, the period wherein the aspirant struggles to achieve that inner quiet and directed attentiveness which will enable him to hear the voice of the silence. This is like Meditation 101. Okay? So, but yet, a lot of people are running around with really busy minds and astral bodies, and the voice of the silence is not heard. This, what do they call it? The still, small voice. Right? And also, that's the voice of conscience. That voice expresses to him through symbol and interpreted life experience. What did that mean? The purposes and plans with which he may cooperate. According to his stage of development, those plans will express either the already materialized plans taking group form on the physical plane with which he may cooperate, in whose interest he may submerge his own. All right, go to the arcane school. Arcane school is already going, can help the arcane school. Join the arcane school, whatever. Or the plan or fraction of a plan, which is his individual privilege to bring through into manifestation and thus cause to materialize as a group activity on the physical plane. Notice, if it's soul-oriented, as a group activity, it is the function of some aspirants to aid and help those groups which are already functioning, in functioning activity. It is the function of others to bring into being those forms of activity which are as yet on the subjective plane. Only those aspirants who are freed from personal ambition can truly cooperate in this second aspect of the work. Therefore, in the words of Master Hilarion, kill out ambition. You notice the light of the soul, you have that little book. The first two pages are kill this, kill that. It's a two pages of kill. Everything that you've got that's wrong with you, kill, kill, kill. And then about page five, you have to rip your heart out and watch it bleed. It's a very first-rate, sixth-rate book. Okay.
And just of course, it's a hydro as well.
Yeah, love of power. The kind of, on the emotional plane, love of power, ambition. Yeah, okay. Whoa, so where do you stand in this? Are you bringing through your own? Are you finding something on the physical plane that you have been able to cooperate with? Maybe you're doing both. Maybe you're originating your own projects, which are not really your own, and also cooperating with that which has been promoted. But the big thing about all of this is that the ego is out of the way, otherwise there's distortion, and it doesn't work. In other words, before you know it, it's not the plan that's important, it's you. You know, if ambition and ego are part of this. And we've all seen that. And we've seen mixtures of the same.
Yeah.
Yeah, the plan's important, but I'm also important, and you know. And then before you know it, as DK says, the personality begins gesticulating and drawing attention to itself. You know. So I think that's pretty amusing. And we see it happening all the time. And anyway, as we read the books, we get smaller and smaller, and that's a help. Okay, so let's see. What are we looking at here? The thought form created is brought into being. So what we're talking about is the bringing into being of the thought form in the three stages. That's what we're talking about. Okay. All right. Then the second stage. So we have approached the voice of the silence. And, the voice of conscience is always sounding and advising and so forth. Do we all have experience with this still, small voice? I guess so.
It's still small, yes.
It's still, yes. I felt it was like putting up the baseball and watching the bat come right through, you know. You were set up on that one. Okay. Ben, point two. The period wherein he habituates himself to the clear hearing and correct interpretation of the inner voice of the soul, and there's our word again, broods reflectively over the imparted message. And this is before, we might say, before sounding the strengthening om. S-T-R-E-N, oh, strengthening. Good. During this period, the energy circulates, presumably between the meditator and the higher meditator. A constant rhythmic response to the thought energy of the soul is set up. You keep revisiting this impulse that you receive from the soul, and figuratively speaking, there is a steady flow of force between that center of energy we call the soul on its own plane, and that center of force, which is a human being, and notice here again, energy and force. He's not always clearly differentiating them, but in the personality is force, in the soul it's energy. So there's a rhythm. The energy travels along the thread we call the sutratma and sets up a vibratory response between brain and the soul. And by sutratma, we mean the translation of that term is
life
thread. Okay. So this is stage two. First, stage one, we hear the voice of the silence. Stage two, we clarify the voice of the silence and create this rhythmic interplay. It's very Gemini kind of thing between the soul and person. And it's especially, Mercury, Venus, and even very Venus. There's a magnetic rapport, Venus, the esoteric ruler of Gemini, magnetic rapport between the two meditators.
So yes. This might be experienced then as just a general increase in anticipatory energy.
Okay.
Because it's coming up, it's a life thread, there's some kind of interplay going on, so you might feel something's coming.
Something's coming, and the soul on its own level, or our higher self, hears what we return. That we read about yesterday. There's a pause on the higher level, and the soul hears what we return. And then, you know, feedback. Yeah, this is a period of rhythmic, harmonic feedback. Okay. Well, you know, I think that as we become creators, we will experience this, and all of us are to a certain extent. Yes. Yes. Oh, no? Yes.
Yes. Just thinking about the sutratna and how in many of our experiences, I think, we're somewhat unconscious to the soul's true thought, the soul's true intention. We're impressed. We have some... There's something going on there, and we somehow are orienting ourselves in one direction or another in some kind of reflection of the soul. But it may be that it's the Antahkarana which reveals the soul's purpose in its fullness, or we see the vision at the third initiation, but the sutratna is what's leading us forward until we reach that point where we see clearly.
Well, one will convey the sense of vitalization, energetic impulse, and the other may convey content of consciousness. And remember, the Antahkarana is really in two portions, so when we come into rapport with the ego, that's the first step. That's ruled by Saturn, and then comes the Mercury part of it, where we, as the soul-infused personality, will connect with the triad. So we're talking not about the second part, but about the first part of the Antahkarana here. Okay. An interesting angle of information might here be given, as it is my intent of these instructions ever to link up the analogies between the different aspects of divinity. Well, that's obvious, isn't it? And they express themselves in man as they express themselves in man with the microcosm, the heavenly man. The ancient yoga of Atlantean days, which has come down to us in the necessarily fragmentary teaching of the yoga of the centers, okay, and the specific name of that is?
Laya Yoga.
Conveys to us the information that the reflection of the sutratma in the human organism is called the spinal cord, and expresses itself in three nerve channels presumably within the spinal cord. But if he calls nerve channels, that sounds concrete. So maybe there is a concrete aspect and an etheric aspect. It sounds concrete. These are called Ida, Pingala, and the central channel, Sushumna. When the negative and positive forces of the body, which express themselves via Ida and Pingala nerve roots, are equilibrized, the forces can ascend and descend by the central channel to and from the brain, passing through the centers up the spine without hindrance. So, in other words, we have We have something here called equilibrization before the use, or if we say full, the full use of the Shushumna. So Libra is involved again in both. So interesting. Libra to Shambhala, Libra the Royal Road, Libra equilibrization. And all of this according to spiritual law and spiritual will. This is Atma. This is the preliminary stage to getting the full shot up to the top of the head. Libra is very involved.
Again, it's the Libra Shambhala, Libra to...
Yeah, I'll put it Libra, equilibrizing real, Libra the Royal Road, Libra, and this is a wonderful term, you've heard it, the path of the just. Shineth evermore until the perfect day. Justice, just, Libra, right? And also Shambhala. Libra, peace, and Shambhala. Amazing how powerful this sign really is, you know, coming into fuller appreciation of it. When this is the case, we have perfected soul expression in the physical man, and later more, even more, the Shambhala within him. So, now, you know, I'm not up on my anatomy here, but I think that there are physical correspondences to these channels within the spinal column. There are nerve roots, tangible nerve roots, which are the physical correspondences. And it actually says the three become one. So the passage up the central channel has to be like a threefold made into a one. And often in the nadis, when there are separate tubes, the outlines of the tubes break down and all the energy is integrated together. This is part of the healing discussion in telepathy. So we may have separate passages at first and they all unite. It's an analogy to the integration of the personality. We have separate functions of various aspects, let's say, of the mind, and then they all unite into one sphere. Three minds unite. And with an integrated personality, there's a lot of mutual interplay. It even gets harder to read the rays with certain integrated personality types because the soul energy is showing up in all the vehicles and the personality energy is not confined to a separate level, but is showing through all the vehicles, etc. Yes.
Yeah, we saw. I think it's more than an analogy. A wonderful expression of this. I forget the woman's name who had the stroke, but you've seen it a lot.
Oh yeah.
And she was talking now. This is like 9-10 years after the stroke. We're watching an interview with her. She was saying, you know, when she lost the left hemisphere, all the right hemisphere was operative. What you get here is all the spiritual things. Everything came through. When she was talking early on, when she did the first thing at the TED conference about how wonderful that whole right brain experience was. It's all the mystical kind of things. And gradually, left brain begins to come back into her. So now she's talking, you know, on track. She's saying, because she's a scientist, brain scientist, before she had the stroke. The things are coming integrated now. She said, what I realized was now I can operate again in the physical world. So, putting left and right hemisphere together, I've been trying to think, oh, there's something with the brain hemispheric balance, because she got just hit strongly away from her set. She's now said, I can fully function in the world. It's taken 9 or 10 years to bring them both back and to see the usefulness of each. It's a great story. You haven't seen, she's got a book out now, the stories are, there's the early TED moment. She had an interview with Charlie Rose, I guess.
We can get her talk again now some years after this interview, which is on the YouTube. Well, aspiring occultists really have to function in both ways, don't they? I mean, if we lose our physical effectiveness, our intelligence of the world, we're just not scientific occultists at all.
Yeah.
However much we might be inspired by visions of unity. So, and that's where we maybe discriminate ourselves from a lot of the folks in the more Atlantean spiritual movements who are interested in going into these, you know, states of consciousness, but the application is not your formless thing yet.
In the case of the mystic, where they go into these states of consciousness and stay there for 12, 15 years and are able to sit and be eaten by rats and be in bliss, okay?
I see a video in this.
So isn't that a sort of a cop-out? We, as white magicians, that's not our road.
No. No, but everybody, I'm sure that we were eaten by rats earlier. Or ants. You know what I mean? Everybody goes through these things, but the stages are being rather compressed now. So you're not allowed to kind of linger, you know, in these these rather indulgent. You can be spiritually indulgent too, can't you? I mean, it's certainly possible to be.
Yeah, you can get high from it.
Yes,
and
yes.
Really like the high.
It's important to be high and low at the same time, you know. Okay, yes, I agree with that. And so let's do something. Right. All right. This is a reality. This is in reality a correspondence to the Sutra Atma as it links the physical man and the soul. For the Sutra Atma, in its turn, expresses the positive energy of spirit, the negative energy of matter, and the equilibrized energy of the soul. So all types of energy are expressed in the Sutra Atma. The trinity of energies is expressed in the Sutra Atma. Okay. The attainment of equilibrium being the present objective of humanity. So that's soul culture, right? That form of electricity we don't know too much about. The solar fire is our next objective. Solar fire expressed in every aspect of our life without compromising our intelligence in the world. This is our objective at the moment. Spirit is a more distant objective. But we know what we have to do, putting the second and third aspects of divinity together at this time. During the period of the later initiations, the positive use of the spiritual energy supersedes the equilibrized use of soul force. You see this working out in some of the great souls. You see this in Ramakrishna. You see this in Vivekananda. You know, you don't yet see this so much in the Dalai Lama, not because he doesn't have it, but it's not his modus operandi with the world. He has a different plan, you know. He's not talking at all about destruction. It's the Bodhisattva line, and it's all constructive, right human relations. He's holding back that. Maybe in some of the Kala Chakra initiation things, he does more. Okay. But that is a later stage with which the aspirant need not as yet trouble himself. Let him find the noble middle path between the pairs of opposites, in this case, soul and personality, soul and personality, and incidentally he will find that the forces he uses on the physical plane will employ the central nerve channel up the spine. So whether we're doing soul or whether we're doing spirit, the central nerve channel will be employed for both soul and spirit. Okay. This will occur as the transmission of light and truth to the physical brain via the central channel of the linking Sutra Atma really works out into satisfactory usefulness. Okay, so as we, so there's something about the service and the activation of the Sushumna. Okay, those ideas and concepts speaking in symbol will come via the sutratmic negative channel, which come via the sutratmic negative channel, are well-meaning, but lack the force and peter out into insignificance. They are emotionally colored and lack the organized form which pure mind can give. Those which come via the opposite channel, speaking figuratively, produce too rapid concretion and are motivated by the personal ambition of the ruling mentality. Lots of first-ray imagery there. And the mind is ever egoistic, self-seeking, and expresses the personal ambition which carries within it the germ of its own destruction. So this is soul culture he's talking about, and he's talking about the Sushumna and the right and left channel of the Sushumna. Therefore, is he talking about Ida and Pingala, or is he talking about a threefold Sushumna?
But is it not threefold Sushumna?
Well, in other words, are Ida and Pingala considered to be aspects of Sushumna?
Well, how you think about electricity, because it's a fire by friction, solar fire, and electric fire.
Well, so I think that the
Sushumna... In one sense they are different, in one sense they are the same.
I think that the Sushumna can carry the equilibrized electricity, or at a later stage, the positive electricity, in which case the right and the left become soul and, you know, soul and personality. Anyway, there's a first rate, there's a very positive, masculine, egoistic force there, you know, speaking of an abuse. There's a negative, not sufficiently strong, feminine force, and then there's an equilibrized force. So, okay, finally, when, however, the sutraatmak shushumna, the central nerve channel and its energy is employed, the soul, as a magnetic intelligent creator, transmits its energy. So, there's no question in this case that soul energy is transmitted via the shushumna in, at this stage. Now later I have a feeling that when spirit really gets into the act, it's not soul energy. No. Now shushumna then is the full.
And there is still spirit. The same way as monad is having the access to the personal via the chakras.
Mm.
So the same way shushumna has it, otherwise we couldn't even walk if shushumna would not have the contact. It's a very tiny contact to spirit.
Mm-hmm.
And then when we evolve, it becomes very powerful.
Mm-hmm.
It's like this like a rot of power or rot of flaming.
Rot of initiation. It is the rot of initiation. I mean, in a way, the spinal column is. The planet.
You're talking about the key nervous system, and I'm trying to think how we have the central nervous system. And then we have the autonomic nervous system that has the sympathetic and the parasympathetic.
Mm-hmm.
So we do have three nervous systems.
Three nervous systems.
And
three.
How that will correlate with these three channels.
Cerebral, sympathetic, parasympathetic, and cerebral.
And central nervous system. Central. So voluntary and involuntary. The central nervous system is the voluntary, and the autonomic is the involuntary, with the two branches.
With the two branches, sympathetic and parasympathetic. So that's, I think, a good way of looking at it. I'm still trying to figure out whether the Shushumna as the central channel has three aspects to it, and whether Ida and Pingala are two of those aspects or not.
Well, I think he was referring to the sutrasmic, the negative sutrasmic channel, not the negative shushumna channel, which leads me to believe this, the sutrasmic is the central, I mean the shushumna is the central, and then the Ida and Pingala are the left and right of the
Right. I think the whole spinal apparatus is said to be a reflection of the sutrakma here.
Right.
Didn't he kind of suggest that?
And within those three,
this is very physical interpretation, but it has very esoteric interpretation of that, the Ida Pingala and Shushumna for the disciples and the initiates, so how the powers will flow through that. And they are related to lunar life, the solar life, and spiritual life. So if the whole story is there, and that is the tree of life in us, in one sense also. So in the East, they have been writing only these three huge books, because all the energy, spiritual energy, higher energy which pours into the body is related to that circulation. But this is very physical when we talk about the nerves that are connected.
The sutratmic negative channel, how do we interpret that? The sutratmic negative channel, I mean, are we going to interpret that as either Ida or Pingala?
Yes.
So we're going to interpret that as Ida?
Ida, right.
Mm-hmm. As Ida, are well-meaning but lack force and peter out into insignificance. They are emotionally colored and lack the organized form which pure mind can give. Those which come via the opposite channel. Now, in this particular case, this is Pingala carrying mentalized spirit energy. Now, maybe not solar power yet. At this stage, mentalized spirit energy. In other words, and I'm trying to say that they kind of switch places depending on the stage of evolution you're in. So the central channel carries soul energy at this time. But when we switch to the next phase of spirit development, then the central channel will carry the majority of spirit energy and not soul energy, and the soul will have switched to the right, with the personality still to the left.
Yeah.
Cool. Yeah. Yeah.
Cool.
Okay. The mind is ever egoistic, carries will, carries a lot of ego, carries the first grade. If you look at our personality, mind is ray one, emotions ray two, and physical ray three. You know, that's the 1, 2, 3 of it. Of course, from another perspective, we can do 1, 2, 3 in the opposite direction as well. Vitality, power, you know, and then ultimately mentality on the mental plane. You can always reverse 1 and 3, and 2 stays in the middle. So.
The germ causing destruction, it carries selfishness.
Yes.
Egoism, self-seeking.
Yes, separativeness.
Destruction. Can we say a sentence to clarify that?
Egoism always alienates others and causes a karmic counterattack which destroys the egoistic agent, softens him up. This is called, in the first grade technique of integration, you provoke a counterforce because of all of your egoistic activity, and that is a karmic retribution, and then you are privileged to see in the light which shocks all you have destroyed. And this time you're not just defending yourself, you're humbled. So following the counterattack of the forces that you have alienated, you are in a position to see in the eyes of the soul the sorrow you have caused, the destruction you have caused, and then you begin to absorb second-ray methods which are non-egoistic. We're talking here about how the first ray creates separation and how the mind carries the first ray. So, in other words, when you are separate from another, you seek to dominate another, you don't care about another, you deprive another, it provokes the destruction of the perpetrating agent. And we see this all the time. If you live by the sword, you die by the sword. You rise to power through murder, you die, you fall from power in the same way. We see it with all the so-called strongmen type of governments that have come in. Idi Amin, he was lucky or unlucky, but he went out, and Saddam Hussein, I suppose, is one very prominent character that rose and died according to the same method. Soul energy is transmitted by Shishumna at this time. The plans can then mature according to divine purpose, as seen by the ego, and proceed with their building activities in the light. Or let's just say, in this case, in egoic light. We are not yet trying to build in monadic light. When we have achieved the third initiation and know it to be a fact, then we can talk about that. Right now we are aspirants, eventually, to the second and third initiation. And we want to build in the light of the soul. The point of egoic and lunar contact emits ever the point of light. And what about the fourth subplane of the mental plane? When we talk about the point of egoic and lunar contact, there's a interface between the higher mental plane and the lower mental plane, and I'll bet that this is where that point of light has to be situated, as we have seen from our rules of magic, and that has its point, its focus at the point in the Sutratma which has its correspondence to the light in the head of the aspirant. So this is somewhere between the phenomenal, somewhere between the etheric and the dense physical. Nope, divine plan. Sorry. Had lost the original. All right, so there are certain of these interfacing points, and we're going to learn something about where land and water meet. That dry spot is an interface point between the dense physical and the etheric. There's an interface point, and the gaseous level is considered an interfacing dimension. In other words, if you want to stimulate yourself etherically, you breathe, right? This is gas is dense, and yet it's not. It's already leading into the ethers. So we're going to study these points where things come together and what can be created at them. Apparently, in the Sutratma, there is such a point. The light in the head is probably occurring etherically, but very close to the dense physical mechanism. And there's a place on between the higher mental plane and the lower mental plane where probably this point of light, which is our thought form, is being created. So look for the interfacing, how do you call those, planes, or the, there's a word for it, where two things come together. Interstices or nexus or, yeah. But let's just say the shared, let's say it's shared surface, which is not accurate, but you get the idea. Okay. Now, the third period. So what was the first period? Let's see if we can remember that far. You heard the voice of the silence. The second period was you rendered more clear the voice of the silence. Was it not so? Let's get back there. Yes, you habituate yourself to the clear hearing and correct interpretation. It's one thing to hear, but it's one thing to have a reliable, clear, correct hearing of that which is coming through. What is your soul saying to you right now? It's too early for it to be saying lunch, lunch, lunch. You ought to be doing something else. Okay. That's nice. I like whatever that is. Is that incense? Yes.
Yeah,
looks right. Like that. Oh, you mean send them over here? That's right. All right. Well. All right. And the third stage, the period wherein he, the magician, sounds the sacred word and blending it with the voice of the ego or soul sets in motion mental matter for the building of the soul. That's so concise, you know. So that certainly is, even though the thought form may initially be sounding a little, this act of the magician on the physical plane is going to swell the sound of the ego, and it's going to augment whatever little note is present in the thought form you are building. Have you tried this? Have you worked on this? You know, using the Om, literally the sacred word, the attuned Om, right, to swell the ego's thought form. Okay. Using the attuned Om. Now, I think the thing that's important is we can get our soul instruction secondhand from other people, or we can get it from ourselves. And there feels to be a difference, because no matter how good is the idea that someone else tells you, until you've made it your own, it's still rather pale compared to what comes through for you with livingness. Something you know you have to do. Like all those books you have to write, all those images you have to put forth, all those compilations you have to make. Who's talking here? Okay.
The director.
But that's really right. You know, that is the director. That's the stage analogy. That's the play, the dramatization analogy. Okay. Let's read that again. The third period. Okay, reviewing. You hear the voice of the silence. You clarify the voice of the silence, and now you begin to sound the Om while you're building a replica of that which the voice of the silence has conveyed. Sound the Om while building the replica of that which the voice of the silence has conveyed, as you understand it. Because you're not getting the full impression. Use brooding and time lapse photography for a fuller impression. And do not rush into the strengthening process. Or you may strengthen something that's not correct.
Pace makes wise.
Okay. Oh, boy, that was a Mongolian word. That's a Ah, that's the Mongolian word for strengthening. Okay. Haste makes waste.
Watch your spaces there.
Okay. I just call. It's all email. And you can also broad if you like. Okay. It is the man, so the period wherein he sounds the sacred word and, blending it with the voice of the ego or soul, sets in motion mental matter for the building of a thought form. Let's take a moment to make an experiment. Let's just align for just a moment. And we will imagine that the soul is sounding its note in the creative process, impressing upon your brain a pattern, a directive, an instruction, something which it wants to come through, be rendered manifest on the physical plane. So you can take your time here and see what it is the soul seems to be attempting to convey. Now what we're going to do is we're going to sound an ongoing om in the group. Of course we can do this solemnly, but just for more demonstrative purposes, we will sound the word. And while we're doing this, we will be visualizing in detail and building some replica of the soul's intention on the mental plane. So we'll work we will not sound the om loudly, but we will, every time your breath runs out, rejoin, and meanwhile watch the thought form unfold on the mental plane according to what the soul is attempting to impress. turn to the person next to you, and there'll be three on this end, and discuss a little bit your experience of the impression, the replication, the augmentation, the growth of 2, 2, 2, 2, 2, 3. Okay. Well, I've heard maybe it's only what I've been thinking all along, in a sense. Builders, were you able to were you able to receive the next directive? Or important directive? Were you able then to vitalize your directive? Were you able to sense it expanding? Yes.
I had a question. Yes. Prior to your question, the question is, from whence cometh the inspiration to choose a thought form? Or in other words, is that sounding of the egoic, the first note? Is that also a point of inspiration, or is that only what comes after we say, or I say to myself, we need to build an economic order based upon principles of love and justice? Okay, fine. So I assert that.
Did you assert that, or did that come through to you?
No, that's fine. That's good.
That's yours. That's yeah, okay.
But the question is the egoic note, did that already sound, or is the egoic note just the response? When I say, okay, now you're thoughtful, rude, then you go up those sounds, and people use the phrase, download begins, ideas begin to flow, thoughts, that kind of thing. So my question is, for me, I look at what the world needs, so that's forgiving by what do you want to work on. Okay, so that's the issue. But the sound of the egoic note, could that also be a what should we be focusing on in the first place?
I think so. I think so in a way. And maybe you wouldn't even be saying that unless you had already intuited what the egoic note was sounding. Maybe that's already I'm sure that the ego has something specific in mind for each one of us, and we make various thought forms to cover aspects of what its overall download is.
So it would be the point of inspiration then. It would be
the ego is meant to be the point of inspiration, the true magician. I'll tell you what, before I start naming any mantras, I just want to tune in on what might be coming down. I don't want to lay anything on it, as good as it may be.
Yeah.
You know, so I start with, what do I sense the voice of the silence is saying? And then when I get a sense of it, then I want to augment it or make a replica of it, and making that replica, I found that as I was sounding the Om, different aspects of the original began to gather around it, even plans.
Yeah,
you know, I might say yes.
Yeah, I was thinking with this kind of exercise, if it is a good idea to start to perceive that it's to go into, you know, aligning, connecting, and trying to translate whatever information is coming and resonating with the Om.
Yeah.
In a kind of a fast manner, as we have done, it was like, you know, in 10 minutes.
Quite fast,
Or if it's a better approach that we go much slower in I mean, as a regular, I know this is an exercise, but I'm just wondering if it's an invitation to kind of do this process that fast, or is much quicker. It's better to go much slower.
I think when you're working by yourself, you just have a sense of what you need. But when you're dealing with a group and group time, you just get the outline of it. You know, and some people, of course, can maybe learn to work very fast. In other words, sometimes things come full-blown, instantaneously, make their impression, and you can do many things in an encapsulated moment of time. But in general, I would say if you're working by yourself, take as long as you need, you know.
Well, you know,
feel your way through it.
I find impressions you do it this fast, because I normally don't do it this fast. I just let it be, but because the compassion of time, I found that, you know, something...
Something does happen. Something does happen. Right. And just because time is dilated doesn't mean the impression is going to be any more forceful or better, you know. So I would experiment in all different ways. If I'm just by myself totally, I might linger over this impression for quite a while. But out of the circumstances, things can be done more quickly. What does DK says? Think fast, act slowly.
The other thing that I find effective is to ask if I have something that I'm interested in exploring, you know, or for instance, Gail had a perception of the process itself, which is very interesting.
Okay.
And so I love the idea of process, and that's interesting to me. So that's the kind of something that I would ask. I would ask, let me understand this process better. And I would be asking that of my soul. And so in that way, I would direct and open the door for receiving by virtue of the intention.
Yeah. It's the old formula, ask and you shall receive.
Yeah.
You know? So, you know, basically, nobody's going to get home by any other person's path. It's your own path, you're evolving it out of yourself, it's trial and error. You're going to find your own unique way, and only the principles are revealed to us. So the working out is your own, whatever it has to be. Gail, you weren't wanted to say?
Well, I watched a moving picture, as is often the case with me, with like a corkscrew. The light was coming down like a corkscrew to a point, and it really anchored. And then it came this vibrating lotus, kind of octopus kind of thing. And then I'm looking at this and I'm going, what is that? And then the idea of solidarity came through.
Solid.
So I wrote it down and I'm like, okay, now does this mean solidarity of the boss form? Does it mean solidarity of the well, you know, I'm not sure yet what that means, but I sure got the message about solidarity. And I did have
Work to be done. Absolutely, and it's all uncharted territory. You have to ponder on this and see where it takes you. Nobody has enough detail to guide you point by point. And even when Master DK was giving his meditations, he didn't guide people point by point. He said, "You unfold this. You work this out yourself." Yeah. Okay, we're good. I mean, you know, we're not going to have like a big review right now, but this is just, you know, you can experiment with this kind of thing. Probably there are many processes here with which we can experiment. And they are a bit compressed, you know, but maybe we can get the essence if we go with them.
It's really useful. It's really good
for you. Yeah, well, we've been emphasizing this particular process so much that we might as well have a little go at it.
Yeah.
You know,
making a part of the process.
Well, we sure want to know that it is the soul speaking in us, you know. There is a voice of the silence. It's relatively silent, and we oftentimes just don't pay any attention to it, so we have to cultivate that alignment, and then if we can replicate it somehow, what's really trying to come through, and then if we can grow it and expand it and plan according to it, well, we've got a little embryo of the white magical process. That's it. Okay, so it is the man on the physical plane who now sounds the word, and he does it in four ways. He becomes the word incarnated and endeavors to be what he is. You know, he has the sense that what is sounding, that he's really the one who's sounding, and What is sounding is what he is. He is the Word. He is the Word in incarnation. The Word is on the egoic level, and he is the Word as that Word is transferred to the lower worlds. He sounds the Word within himself, the lower man, seeking to do it as if the soul, as the soul. He visualizes, although he's sounding within himself, he visualizes himself as the soul. That's why, you know, in this morning's meditation, I tried to divide our sense of identity above the dotted line and below the dotted line simultaneously. So he visualizes himself as the soul breathing out energy through the medium of that word through the entire system which the soul animates. He's he's below, but he's imagining above, and what's happening below is reanimating that which is below, and a loop is created, that which the soul animates. I mean, can we, when you visualize yourself as the soul, what do you do? I'm sure each one has a unique way of going about it. I mean, do you negate the ordinary images, and does another image come in mind? Or do you affirm an interior image, which then becomes preoccupying? Or do you use no images at all, but just get kind of a kinesthetic state of what it means to be the soul, detached from your customary perceptions?
I never create images. I am in the center of me. That is the best way how I can say. It's a space of silence or darkness or something nothing.
Something nothing? Mm-hmm.
Yes. Mm-hmm. So it's more of presence of that.
Yeah.
Work with presence.
Everyone, I think, probably has a different...
I'm sure they have their different... And according to their ray, I'll bet. You know, I'm sure that if we finally analyzed a well-honed method, it would reflect the ray of the individual, probably the soul ray, probably.
I'm not sure what soul ray my your visualization would be, maybe second ray, which my soul is, but I visualize a blazing point of light coming out of the glow globes.
Okay. Of course, and of course, still you have to be the observer of that light. I mean, you know, anything you can see, you can't be. I mean, in a way.
Yeah. And on that note, I don't see a soul or an entity or something to hold on to. I don't see that.
Yeah, okay.
When I get soul impression, I'm thinking, maybe I'm in the glamour, but a soul impression has warmth and love.
Okay.
And holding it in a
warmth
and love, as opposed to something that the vehicle's mind would create, which may not was a little bit more hard line. Soul impression for me is just a beautiful, non-threatening. Nothing. There's no negativity or badness in it.
You may be revealing some of your soul ray there, as you.
This is interesting.
Yeah, as you, you're a lot of third ray and fourth ray and all that. It could be second ray, huh? Could be second ray.
Yeah.
Could be.
For me, since we are, I normally like to, not always, but often, I like to focus in the image of the sun.
Okay.
Sun, a light, and then that evolves, but that's kind of the center and starting point. It's like I bring the attention to that sun, to that light, and then, as you say, that grows, and then the perception of inclusiveness, oneness, the presence of the soul at some point reveals. But the image helps me to bridge, to open to that.
To bridge, yes. I mean, I noticed, both you and Glenn have a lot of fire signs. You have Aries with Mars and Leo, and Glenda has Leo rising and so forth. I'm trying to... I can't make the pen work. Excuse me.
Genius.
Okay, thank you. I think DK talks about the form of meditation. And he talks about the kind of forms generated in meditation by the hardline people and the softline people. And generally the softline people are larger forms, vaguer forms, less hard edge, and the hardline people are much more well defined, especially the seventh ray, very, very clear cut thought forms. Fifth ray probably is involved in that too. So, just be the observer of whatever forms you create. Obviously, if you see something, you are already removed from that which you see. And that which sees is not that which is seen. So like St. Francis said, what we're looking for is that which is doing the looking. But you never can be the seer behind the seer behind the seer. This is a kind of an impossibility. So eventually maybe you can just be the beer and not see anything whatsoever, but get into that state of presence, But if images can help us get there, I personally, I like to eliminate the lower worlds. I just like them really to fade out and see what remains. And then, of course, I'd like to keep eliminating, actually. You know, it's kind of the old Vedantic method, and see what's left after all possible elimination. But it gets very tricky. It's very tricky. Yes, but both of you, yes. Yes.
In inspiration, I was thinking about the light in the head, which is something which develops and grows over time.
Yes.
As you progress.
Yes.
And all of a sudden it struck me, oh, if you have that little light in the head, it's a permanent open channel to impression from the soul. And so you're constantly receiving.
Yes, yes, yes. And sometimes it's even there and you don't know it's there. So, you know, the question of the phenomenal aspect of things, but basically, yes, I mean, for people of our type, something's been ignited, and that ignition is an open door to increasing revelations, I would say, yes.
Yeah, I don't try to call forth any kind of a specific image. I do something that I think is similar to what Tuya was describing, where I try to go to a place within myself that feels elevated, refined, and I do get one visual registry when I kind of like know I'm getting there.
Mm-hmm.
I tend to have, you know, it's blank here, it's black, then it becomes purple, and the purple kind of recedes away from me, and that kind of process happens continuously throughout, and then I have a almost physical sensation of like floating above everything.
Okay.
You're seeing your brow chakra center.
Is that what it is?
Yeah. It could be. It's got a violet component.
I didn't know it was something specifically.
It's a violet component. But you know, basically, there is sometimes a sense of detachment that goes with this, and the whole idea of floating above is one way of doing that, and you know, affirming what you are and disaffirming what other things are is another way of doing that. Gradually, it's pratyahara, really, isn't it? It's a fifth means of yoga, something like that. It's a withdrawal. It's a withdrawal from one dimension into another. And there's a lot of kinesthetics that go along with this, sensing of new spaces and so forth. So people are going to describe this in various ways, and whatever works for you, you know, really, at this point, whatever works for you.
Tomorrow there will be one new project to interview people and their experiences of the soul.
That would be actually very good. Very good. The experience of the soul and how the soul is perceived and so forth.
Yeah.
Yes.
It's wonderful to listen.
And I think one of the qualities that comes with that is that your sense of being located in time and time happening.
Right.
Tends to like dissipate, and then
right.
You really almost don't know, have I been doing this for 1 minute or 15
exactly.
minutes or
Do you have first
okay.
soul?
Okay.
So what ray is it on your
I side? Think my soul is second ray.
Yeah, I think so.
Regarding the film about souls, how am I going to approach a Buddhist about this?
Start out with AAB people. There'll be enough variety among them. And you can do, you know, around you, you have NS, you have AAB, you have Theosophy. You start out there. And then, yeah. And now for the last comment, there is no soul. Okay. You've been wasting your time. Zip. Okay. Okay. All right. So what do you do here? You, the man of the physical plane now sounds the word. And you know, he doesn't say, I suppose this audibly, but I suppose you can also do this internally, which can be powerful. And he does it in four ways. He becomes the word incarnate, endeavors to be what he is. He sounds the word within himself, seeking to do it as the soul. He visualizes himself as the soul, breathing out energy through the medium of that word, through the entire system, which is soul animates. These are very specific kind of visualizations here, really. He sounds the word, yeah, literally on the physical plane. So maybe earlier it might have been even etherically, or it may have been a silent om before. He sounds the word literally on the physical plane, thus affecting the three grades of matter in his environment. I suppose that's solid, liquid, gas, perhaps. All the time that he is thus occupied, he is holding the mind steady in the light. You know, DK is great for what you might call simultaneous activities in meditation. He keeps on telling us how we have to do all these things at the same time and do them well. Okay. Maybe every advanced meditator is realizing that, I suppose. All the time he is thus occupied, he is holding the mind steady in the light and is keeping his consciousness immovably in the realm of the soul. So it's really simultaneous soul, mind, brain. Now, I guess, you know, check yourself. Do you have any trouble? Do you have any trouble sounding a note and thinking? I mean, it's a bit like walking and chewing gum. Can you sound the note and think? No problem, right? Then can you sound the note, think, and identify as the soul while sounding that note and thinking?
No.
I mean, I think maybe so. I don't see any reason why sounding the Om should be an interference to identifying as the soul. Or maybe the thing you could do is get into your soul identification and then start sounding the note and make sure you don't lose it. And then while you've got those two, you know, it's like the jugglers. They get something going and then they get the next thing going and then they keep those two and then they get that going, you know? So I think there are many little techniques here we have to practice, and some of them are, you know, really quite technical, but they're necessary, and eventually they're all forms, because they lead to that which we are seeking to achieve through the process. Okay. Also, he carries forward, and this is the most difficult stage, a paralleling activity of steady visualization of the thought form through which he hopes to express that aspect of the plan which he has contacted and which he hopes to bring into active being through his own life and his own environment. In other words, while you're being the soul, while you're sounding the Om, while you're mentally focused, now comes visualization drawing upon the higher aspect of the astral body, and it's all happening at the same time, and you don't let any of it go. You promote it. Now, I think after a while, it's not too hard to sustain. After a while, the sounding of the external Om can be very unconscious. I mean, it just keeps going. But I would recommend that it's easier to sound the external Om than it is to imagine the Om while you are trying to create the visualization, because those two things are operating at the same level. See, this can almost be automatic, Om, 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 whatever, and I'm working on another level. But if I'm trying to sustain an ongoing Om auditorily, internally, while I'm working visualistically, okay, maybe some people can do it, but I would think there would be more interrupts in that process. Except, you know, usually when you're thinking, you don't have to take a breath. I mean, what I'm trying to say is the internal Om doesn't require a breath. Okay?
And I think also, Michael, that when you're, this is my experience, as you were saying, there's two or three or four things that you're trying to do simultaneously. There's a state again where my mind is just like going over those like a checklist. You've
sure.
got to move past that.
Yeah, that's right.
As long as you stay there,
yeah.
you know, it doesn't progress.
It's got
to where you want to be.
It's got to flow a little bit. It's got to loosen up. You know, you have to allow it to kind of. This is where the mixer comes into the picture. You know, the mixer is a synonym for the fourth ray. And it's Buddhi as it's operating on the mental level. So while not all of us have fourth ray minds, we have to introduce this kind of mixing and blending visualistic capacity into our minds. Yes.
I think it's easy to get lost in the details once we enter into a creative activity and our attention goes into all of these details, and it's easy to lose sight of what's the true purpose. You know, what is it that's behind the sounding here, and we have to kind of refocus.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Well, I suggest that we become, first of all, I agree with you. Second, I suggest we become so habituated to the details that they are no longer details. They are just a support.
Yeah,
that's
what I was thinking.
Yeah.
Because it seems so cumbersome.
But,
and just so all the
yes.
structure. But think of when we started to drive a car.
Yeah, or started to meditate. You know, DK gives us the long form and the short form. Because he says one is for when you start, And he says you have to hold all these things in mind, and then the short form is like this, you know, after you have that going.
Let me clarify, I think there may be some misunderstanding of what I'm trying to say. The details, I'm not referring to the details of the creative process.
Okay,
but the details that emerge from the manifestation of something on the physical plane.
Okay.
We have an original intent.
Oh, I see. Okay.
Soul-inspired intent. But as that manifests itself, it creates an environment, and we can sometimes lose ourselves in the environment and the details of administrative details and sort of lose touch with that original soul purpose.
And right, the old patterns, because then we repeat this karmic thing into that, and not that fresh thing what the soul would implement.
Yes, the old preaching and...
Right. Every one of us, we know, it's awful. You try to get rid of your old habits, and there they are just coming
ready
again.
Ready to grab you again.
Again.
This is why preachers have revivals, you know. Focus on the essential now, once again.
I thought it was to pass the plate again.
Alrighty. So we've been given a wonderful 4-point creative method here. So somehow this is really very important and fleshes out everything we've been given in Cosmic Fire. This is only truly possible when a steady rapport has been established between soul and brain. And you know, it's almost like we have to go through the day and really say, look, the rapport between soul and brain is what I want to sustain. And we have not to lose that through relapsing into habitual methods of thought and feeling and so forth. Our reflexes are our enemies here until we build really good spiritual habits. Okay. The process involves the capacity of the brain to register what the soul is visioning and become aware of the kingdom of soul. And at this point, I think we're dealing with what's called the template and the temples. In the temple. Mm-hmm. There's something here about occultly the use of this area and the template that can be created for the registering of soul impression. It involves also a paralleling activity in the mind, for the aspirant must interpret the vision and utilize the concrete intelligent faculty for the wise adaptation of time and of form to the true expression of that which has been learned. I believe this is what he would call making the plan. This is by no means an easy thing to do, but the aspirant has eventually to learn to express himself in full consciousness in more than one way, and that simultaneously. Okay, so that's the principle he repeats all the way through his meditative instructions. And we do indeed learn how to do many things at the same time. When we are driving a car, we can handle the radio, we can handle the... what do you call it, the accelerator or the non-accelerator, we can have a conversation and we can have an accident, we can do all these things at the same time. Okay. He begins to learn a triple activity in this manner. This, the old commentary expresses as follows. The solar orb shines forth in radiant splendor. The illuminated mind reflects the solar glory. The lunar orb rises from the center to the summit and is transformed into a radiant sun of light. When these three suns are one, Brahma breaks forth, a lighted world is born. Now, we could say, what does that mean? But fortunately, he tells us, maybe before reading what he tells us, we should interpret it. What do you think? Okay, who would like to be first? The solar orb shines forth in radiant splendor. The illuminated mind reflects the solar glory. The lunar orb rises from the center to the summit and is transformed into a radiant sun of light. When these three suns are one, Brahma breaks forth, the creative God, right, and a lighted world is born. What does this suggest to us?
Is that emerging?
Yes, emerging certainly at the end of the process. And how can we identify these three suns? How would we see them?
I think I would say if the sun that comes from the solar, then the sun that comes from mother, and then it is the one that is born. So it's the mother, the father, the mother, and the son is born. And then when we have that one, then we kind of
There's something here about the Kundalini as well, I mm-hmm. think, you know.
Well, the lunar lords are now being transmitted up to us from their centers, up to the top, to the summit, where they can go.
See, the summit is also... Yes, okay, okay, all these are good ideas, and I do think Father, Mother, and Son are definitely there, and the center, the summit immediately begins to suggest the top of the head or the soul itself, and there's the mind held steady in the light here, is there not? The illuminated mind is also kind of like a reflection, isn't it? It's a reflection of the soul in the mind. And then there is, you know, the lunar orb. There's always a form when there's a lunar orb. There's something of a material nature which is rising into the solar area. And three suns, Brahma, the creative God, breaks forth. A lighted world is born. So, is the moon related to the gathered, what you would call it, Vedic lives? You know, who have to find their place within the new thought form, something of that nature. Okay, let's see what DK says. This literally means that when the soul, symbolized as the solar orb, the mind, and the light in the head form one unit. See, that's the lunar orb. The creative power of the solar angel can express itself in the three worlds, and can construct a form through which its energy can actively express itself. The lunar orb, the lunar orb is a symbolic way of expressing the solar plexus, which must do things. Okay. Let's see. All right. It's a good thing he had something additional in mind, didn't he? All right. The lunar orb is a symbolic way of expressing the solar. Actually, you know, it's quite true. You know, there's a moon here. There's a moon here. Both those places. Blend and fuse the energies of the lower two centers of force and raise these fused energies, and so, blending with the energies of the other and higher centers, reach the head, the summit. So he's speaking in the language of vehicles and also in the language of chakras in this old commentary section.
So what light is that in the head?
The light in the head, what he's going to say, how it is born etherically and goes from a diffuse light to a sun, to a bright electric light, and that will symbolize the coming together of the light of the soul and the light of matter. And he's going to explain this light in the head process. Wait, I had something in mind there. Oh, well, it's gone. Okay.
Speaking of, you're saying vehicles and chakras?
Yeah, vehicles is one thing and chakras is another thing. Yeah, exactly. That was one thing.
Pick up your thought.
Okay, that was certainly one thing. There's something about the marriage of the sun and moon going on here. I am the soul and also love I am. Above all else, I am both will and fixed design. I am both will and fixed design. I therefore will to lift the lower self into the light, divine, that light am I. Therefore I must descend to where the lower self awaits my coming. That which desires to lift and that which cries aloud for lifting are now at one. So this, in a way, is a repetition of meditation number 2 in the Dynabooks, where you sound the word from the top of the head, you visualize the solar plexus center and the merging of the higher and lower solar plexus, and then you sound the Om down into the solar plexus center, actually the base of the spine center, but also solar, and lift it up through the heart into the head center. So that's a replica of this little meditation. That's what I wanted to say. Also, when we're dealing with the meditation called the technique of light, we have to bring together the light of matter, the moon, the light of mind, and the light of the soul, and create an intensifying beam of light which we project through the Ajna center onto the astral plane. So that's also a similar kind of method. Well, we're given a lot of very practical techniques here, and we have to learn how to use them. Okay. So permitting of the recognition of the three man. Okay, let's see what it says here. All the above embodies a teaching and a theory. This has to be wrought out into practical experiment and experience and conscious activity of the aspirant. So, what is the present tense of wrought? Rend? W-I?
Yeah.
But rend is like tearing, but if you're going to work it out, is that it?
Yeah.
Rend that's tearing.
That rend is tearing. But how do you say, I'm working something out and using the word wrought? What is the present tense of wrought?
Rend with a W.
Is there such a thing? I mean, I would think so.
It works out in a practical sense.
Yeah, but if you say, I wrought that out, how do you say, I am something it out? Instead of working.
Yeah, working out.
Yeah, well, work it on out.
I think it comes from the same word as like for wrought iron.
Yeah,
it's iron that's been worked on in the forge.
Yes, but it's such an old word that the present tense is hard to get a hold of. Yes.
Do a little Google.
Yes, we certainly could. The present tense of wrought, please. All right, now we're really curious. All right, on to a little diversion here. Is anything in Virgo? Probably not.
Let's just
see. Yeah, wrought iron, you know. So we'll just say... Yes, well, we can get around it. Rendering, rend. I want present tense of wrought. Well, that's a synonym. You must speak of one that loves not wisely but too well, one not easily jealous but being wrought, perplexed in the extreme. But wrought is overwrought, you know, so that's not it exactly. I had always thought that wrought was the past tense and past participle of reap. In a way. The question made me look up reek in the dictionary, and I was amazed to find that I was wrong. Reek, wreck, wretch. I tell you what. What is it?
How about render?
I'll tell you what. I'm going to leave this to people who have more Virgo in their chart than I do.
Wretch.
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 I render it. Yes. Render and is good. Is good. Yeah. Render.
I don't think that's a word. But
we can make one up, and we can have a neologism and go into the third rank. We don't have to be limited by what is. Okay.
What is the print? Is it the
wrought out means worked out. You know, you have to
is
make
that
it happen.
The root word.
Hammered out.
Does that have the future?
Yeah. Only instead, you get the sense that you're actually applying.
It's kind of twisted.
Yeah. Twisting something around into the shape of a wheel. You know.
Have you seen that black iron that's kind of twisted?
Wrought iron. Reek. All right. We've deviated just a little bit. Okay. I would like also to point out the nature of the service humanity as a whole is rendering. There we go. Rendering to the general plan of evolution. The rule under our consideration applies not only to the individual man, but to the predestined activity of the fourth kingdom of nature. Maybe we're not going to look at this right now. This is all good stuff, but I want to go down to the place where it's so good I just hate to skip it, but harmlessness. Yes.
And right.
I really want to speak about harmlessness. Okay. So what are these three points? Garden of Eden, I just saw the Garden of Eden. Okay, note this difference. As a luminous priest of that.
One more.
Yeah. I think let's get into harmlessness, because I do think we have to do two rules today. We really must. And harmlessness is so really important. It includes it in here. So, you know, when the shadow hath responded, the work proceedeth, the lower light is thrown upward, the greater light illuminates the three, and the work of the four proceedeth. Okay. Believe it or not, he's going to discuss this idea in the next rule. So somehow, in the next rule, he actually gets to it. He took a little diversion here and went into harmlessness. But let's just look at this harmlessness, because every time I look at it, it looks more and more profound. May I speak a word here so as to make this consummation a practical goal in your life? Harmful magnetic conditions as the result of man's wrong handling of force are the causes of evil in the world around us. Harmful magnetic conditions, including the three subhuman kingdoms. How can we as individuals change this? By the development in ourselves of harmlessness. Now, what does he call it in esoteric healing? Something like perfect poise, a completed point of view, and spiritual understanding, or something.
Sounds very British.
Yeah, it is. It is very, very Buddhist. Harmlessness, perfect poise, a completed point of view, and divine understanding. It's so Libra again. The poise, the completed point of view of both sides and all sides, and divine understanding is strictly Libra. He tells us in Esoteric Astrology 333. So this is not negative. Negative, but perfect poise, or negativity, it sometimes says. This is not negativity, but perfect poise, a completed point of view, and divine understanding. Okay. Therefore, study yourselves from this angle. Study your daily conduct and words and thoughts so as to make them utterly harmless. I think this is hard to do. Set yourself to think those thoughts about yourself and others which will be constructive and positive and hence harmless in their effects. Now, of course, you know, it's possible that destructive results will arise from constructive thought, because when you think about furthering the power of the soul in yourself and others, destruction of form may result.
Right.
Okay. Nevertheless, utterly harmless. That's a nice word. Don't you like utterly? It's so, there's no wiggle room in utterly. Okay. No escape. So set yourself to think those thoughts about yourself, which will be constructive and positive, and hence harmless in their effects. Get this. Study your emotional effect on others, so that by no mood, no depression, no emotional reaction can you harm your fellow men. No mood, no depression, no emotional reaction can you harm a fellow man. Remember in this connection, violent spiritual aspiration and enthusiasm, misplaced or misdirected, may quite easily harm a fellow man. So look not only at your wrong tendencies, but at your use of virtues. It's rather exacting, isn't it, what he's requiring here. If harmlessness is the keynote of your life, you will do more to produce right, harmonious conditions in your personality than any amount of discipline along other lines. I think after all these years, I might just listen to this. If harmlessness is the keynote of your life, you will do more to produce right, harmonious conditions in your personality than any amount of discipline along other lines. The drastic purgation brought about by the attempt to be harmless, notice he says the attempt, will go far to eliminate wrong states of consciousness. See to it, therefore, and bring this idea in your evening review.
Purgation.
It means to get rid of all negativity, poison. You drastic cleansing.
Purge.
Purge.
Oh, okay, got it.
I would like to urge each one who reads these pages to make a fresh beginning in spiritual living. I would say to him, forget all past achievements. Done. Realize fervor and concentrate upon the plan. Wow, it's like I'm reading this for the first time. By this time, some progress in group realization has surely been made, and less interest in the separated self has been gained. More faith in the good law which guides all creation to ultimate perfection has been visioned without doubt, and through this vision has come the capacity to take one's eyes off the affairs of individual experience and fasten them on the working out of the purpose for the whole. This is the objective and goal. Breadth of vision, inclusiveness of understanding, and a widened horizon are the preliminary essentials to all work under the guidance of the hierarchy of adepts. Breadth of vision, inclusiveness of understanding, and a widened horizon, preliminary essentials. The stabilizing of the consciousness in one's life and the recognition of the basic unity of all creation has to be somewhat developed before anyone can be trusted with certain knowledges and words of power, and the manipulation of those forces which bring the subjective reality into auto-manifestation. He says, if you want the magic words and mantras, this is what you have to do. And it certainly involves wielding the anti-piranha and widening out our point of view to make ourselves trustworthy. It involves mental polarization. Before we are mentally polarized, we're not trustworthy. It involves taking the second initiation, being halfway between the second and the third initiation. It involves that minimally.
Kind of a Hippocratic oath for spiritual works.
Yes, and you know, in this case for the, right, and for the magicians, those who would be. So stabilize the consciousness in the one life. Stabilizing the consciousness in the one life. May the holy ones whose pupils we aspire to become show us the light we seek. Give us the strong aid of their compassion and their wisdom. There is a power with, which is, how do you say, there is a power with maketh all things new. It dwells in, no, there is a peace with passeth understanding. It abides in the hearts of those who live in the eternal. Then there is the power that maketh all things new. It lives and moves in those who know the self as one. So stabilize the consciousness in the one life and recognize the basic unity of all creation. And these are, you can't even be trusted before you do this. Here are five things to gain trust. Okay, five requirements to gain trust so that the formulas may be conferred. Okay, we have to start somewhere. Therefore, I say to you at this time, I, an older and perhaps more experienced disciple and worker in the great vineyard of the Lord, he goes biblical every once in a while, practice harmlessness with zest and understanding. For it is, if truly carried out, the destroyer of all limitation, more than any discipline. Harmfulness is based on selfishness and an egocentric attitude. It is the demonstration of forces concentrated for self-enforcement, self-aggrandizement, and self-gratification. Harmlessness is the expression of the life of the man who realizes himself to be everywhere, who lives consciously as a soul, whose nature is love, whose method is inclusiveness, and to whom all forms are alike in that they veil and hide the light and are but externalizations of the one infinite being. That's a refrigerator quote.
That is. That's exactly what I was thinking.
I'll tell you.
It's on my wall.
That's, wow. Expression of the life of the man who realizes himself to be everywhere. That's fulfilling rule 9, there are no other selves. Who lives consciously as a soul, whose nature is love, whose method is inclusiveness, and to whom all forms are alike, in that they veil and hide the light and are but externalizations of the one infinite being. This realization, let me remind you, will demonstrate a true comprehension of a brother's need, divorced from sentiment and expediency, which is one of the highest psychic powers, the true comprehension of a brother's need. It will lead to that silence of the tongue, which grows out of non-reference to the separated self. It will produce that instantaneous response to true need, which characterizes the great ones who, passing beneath the outer appearance, see the inner cause, which produces the conditions noted in the outer life, and so from that point of wisdom, true help and guidance can be given. Harmlessness brings about in the life caution in judgment, reticence in speech, ability to refrain from impulsive action, and the demonstration of a non-critical spirit. Do you sense the drastic discipline descending? Okay. So, free passage can be given to the forces of true love and to those spiritual energies which seem to vitalize the personality, leading consequently to right action. I'm seeing here the relationship between harmlessness and fear. The whole idea of the free passage, the very first law of healing, demands free passage of soul energy. So harmlessness is the way to that. I guess the healer had better be harmless, and the healer of oneself had better be harmless as well. Let harmlessness, therefore, be the keynote of your life. An evening review should be carried forward entirely along this line, and it is in the Arcane School, I think, the review on harmlessness. So let's see how this works out. Harmlessness in thought will primarily result in control of speech. Harmlessness in emotional reaction, this will result in being a channel for the love aspect of the world, because so many ways we react are not love at all, something very different, you know. Harmlessness in act will produce poise, skill in action, and the release of the creative will. He certainly is. It seems that a magician really needs this. If the creations are going, you know, so it's not really out of place. It has to do with the quality of that which is being created.
What that green do?
What will that green do?
Green, is that
that's your.
No, that's me. Well, yeah, but you know, I like some of the color. Seems important. Would you prefer violet? How's that? Okay, that's good. Okay. These three approaches to the subject should be studied from their effects upon one's own self and development, and from their effect upon those whom one contacts and upon one's environing associates. Okay. Yeah, okay, well here he's just saying, don't listen to us, listen to your soul. You have no obligation to obey, but we do seek trained, intelligent service of the race, and these are developed by self-initiated effort, freedom in action, and discrimination in method, and not by unquestioning obedience, negative acquiescence, and blind following. Let this not be forgotten. And this is a good one, too. It's just like the introductory statement in the beginning of his books. If any command may ever emanate from the subjective band of teachers of whom I am a humble member, let it be to follow the dictates of your own soul and the promptings of your own higher self. That's very much like his original method, you know. Yes, self-reliance. Rely upon yourself. Of course, it's a bit like saying, rely upon the one self of all the universe, the ultimate self, which you are. Rely upon the undeferrable source of power within you.
He's also quickly summing up the major point of the excerpt from the extract from a statement by the Tibetan that precedes each book.
That's it. Exactly so. Well, let's see. Let's not consider the words. Okay. So here is specifically, let's skip a little bit here. Let us not consider the words at the end of the previous rule. Let the lower light is thrown upward and the greater light illuminates the three and the work of the four proceedings. What is this lower light? The student should remember that for present purposes he has three bodies of light to consider. Now, earlier we talked about the dark light. Now he's going to elaborate on this dark light. There is the, so he has three bodies of light to consider. Okay. There is the radiant body of the soul itself, found on its own plane and called frequently the Karana Sarira or the causal body, the radiant body of the soul itself. That's one body of light. That's one sun. There is the vital or etheric body, the vehicle of prana, which is the body of golden light. This is sometimes called the golden bowl, and also the flame-colored vehicle. Interesting, about prana and the effect of orange prana on the vitality of the etheric body.
In death, that bowl is said to be broken.
Right. The breaking of the golden bowl.
The cord snapped and the bowl is broken.
Exactly. Okay. And there is finally the body of dark light, which is the occult way of referring to the hidden light of the physical body and to the light latent in the atom itself, or what's it called, the speck. Let's turn to page 319. 330 of Esoteric Astrology. Are you ready?
Yes.
329, actually. Cancer, the light within the form. This is the diffused light of substance itself, the dark light of matter, referred to in the secret doctrine. It is the light awaiting the stimulation coming from soul light. And then Leo comes in there, which is a lot more like the etheric body, a point of light, reflective point of light, logoic or divine, the light diffused in Cancer, focuses and reveals eventually a point. So let's bring these two in as supplementations to what is being said here. Okay, and I'll make them smaller and much smaller. Okay. So we have three forms of light. Now, we didn't remember yesterday, we did not define what the lower light was. We simply said that it affects the lower three vehicles. Now he's talking about how to bring these three lights together, the light of the physical brain, the light of the etheric brain, and the light of the soul, and all of this together is going to produce the light in the head. Okay. So let's just take a look at that, and I just want to get my colors straight here. I feel deprived of my green, and I have to go searching for it once again. Okay.
I thought you were using the green just for this bracket.
I am. I'm using that, yeah, but I lost it. I had to go back. Okay. All right. So, three types of light. Have we got it? Light of the soul. And he's not talking about the light of the mind now. He's talking about the light of the vital body and the light of the dense body, Anu, the speck, Cancer. He's talking, I don't know, he's talking about Cancer, Aquarius, and Leo. Why? Does that make sense? Well, why about Cancer and Leo, anyway? The light of the soul. The light of the soul. And then the body of diffuse light, dark light, that's Cancer. Now, why might Aquarius be involved here? What sign rules the etheric body more than any other? Yeah. Of course, Gemini is involved too, but Aquarius is this... spreading out of the entire network, the web pulsates, the entire network of light, and transmitting that light to all bodies concerned. So this also has its astrological sort of subtext. If we were going to put this in planetary terms, what would we say? Something like that.
Mercury?
Mercury could be involved in this. Well, actually, you see, this is the interesting thing, because, and Mercury, especially light of the mind, light of the mind, reflecting the sun. Mercury and the sun are one. Okay. But let's just say that if Mercury, if Aquarius and Gemini rule the etheric body, so what are the two rulers? Uranus and Mercury. See, in other words, Gemini and Aquarius rule, and the two rulers are Mercury and Uranus. Okay, the three types of energy are referred to in the old commentary on the following symbolic terms. When the radiant light of the solar angel is fused with the golden light of the cosmic intermediary, what does DK call this? The flame-colored body? It awakens from darkness the rushed light of Anu, the speck. You know, there's the speck of light within the darkness. And basically, Vulcan is connected, good old Vulcan. Vulcan, veiling the sun, is connected with the drawing forth of Froth, drawing forth of Anu into radiance of the sun.
Like the splitting of the atom,
yeah,
releasing that light.
Yeah, okay. Well, Vulcan is somehow the great ruler of the mineral kingdom and all of its power, all of its latent power. Vulcan doesn't really have a hardline monad, I don't think, but it certainly has a hardline soul ray, the first ray. So, okay. The cosmic intermediary is the term given to the etheric body, which is part and parcel of the universal ether. Now, what is the sign of universality? You have good reason for saying so, but DK actually gives us another sign. Yeah, first. Of course, you know, you can say that Pisces is the sign of universal identification. You could say that. And Aquarius, the sign of universal relationship and activity. It is through the etheric body that all energies flow, whether emanating from the soul or from the sun or from a planet. Along those living lines of fiery essence pass all the contacts that do not emanate specifically from the tangible world, but even from the tangible world also they do. Because it's possible for our physicality to affect our ethers, he tells us, when we're dealing with health issues. The dark light of the tiny atoms of which the physical vehicle is constructed is responsive to the stimulation passing down from the soul into its vehicle. And when the man is under the control of the soul, there eventuates the shining forth of the light throughout the body. So he's telling us this is the aura phenomena. So the dark light is awakened by the soul light, and you get the aura phenomenon. This shows as the radiance emanating from the bodies of adepts and saints, giving the effect of bright and shining light.
Okay. One of my images has that halo.
Yeah, exactly. Okay. Let's take a look around the group. Yeah. Okay. So, when the radiant light of the soul is blended with the magnetic light of the vital body, magnetic fluids, it stimulates the atoms of the physical body to such an extent that each atom becomes a tiny radiant center. That certainly must mean the radioactivity and evolution and radioactivity of the atom. Just put an E. E stands for evolution. This only becomes possible when the head, the heart, and solar plexus, now I think we're going to be talking about lifting that solar plexus up. He's going to give us a different definition of what it means for the three suns to come together. Or two suns and a moon. Okay. This only becomes possible when the head, heart, and solar plexus and the center of the base of the spine are connected in a peculiar fashion. Okay, here are four. By the way, I must say the political workers, the head, heart, and base of the spine, that's for the political workers. Is there any group that combines the head, heart, solar plexus, and base of the spine. Any one of the C groups? I don't know if there is. I don't know if there is. There are three groups that have four centers. They all have the head. Most have the heart. The political workers have the base of the spine, but solar plexus is limited to the glamour group, to the psychologists, and the religious group. So I don't think there's any group that has all these four together. Okay, which is one of the secrets of the first initiation. This only becomes possible when head, heart, solar plexus, and the base of the spine are connected in a peculiar fashion, which is one of the secrets of the first initiation. Okay, what's ruling here? Well, head must be, the monad comes to the head, the base of the spine gives you Pluto for elimination, the solar plexus gives you aspiration, the heart is involved. I think we can see how all of these centers must be involved for the first initiation. Birth of the Christ in the heart, it's occultism, so the head becomes involved, spiritual will for the first time. The solar plexus is filled with that aspiration which must make of you a true aspirant leading to the first initiation, and the base of the spine is connected with which dimension of the human personality particularly? Because each chakra, several familiar chakras are associated each with a different vehicle. So what is it that the base of the spine is most associated with?
Which vehicle?
It is the etheric body. The etheric body. And what do we have to achieve at the first initiation in relation to the ethers?
1/4 built in?
Yeah, 1/4 of atomic matter is built in, but it's not only that, it's that magnetic purity of the etheric physical field. So I think, you know, we don't know how these are arranged, but we can certainly see their justification at the first initiation, can't we? I mean, you know, at the first initiation, people are likely to apply all kinds of disciplines to themselves. They need the aspiration, their heart is opening, and the monad has touched for the first time. When these four are in close cooperation, the floor of the triangle, as it is symbolically called, is prepared for the magical work. So this is a four-hole floor. In other words, these can be enumerated as follows. The physical material form with its center at the base of the spine, it's the lowest centers, hence the lowest vehicle, but also the etheric body particularly, with the sacral center having a lot to do with the dense physical also. There's kind of a switch that goes on there. Okay, the physical material form with its center at the base of the spine, the vital body working through the heart center in this case, where the life principle has its seat, the activities of the body which are, usually he says heart center, buddhic plane. But in this particular, well, think about the ethers and the buddhic plane. See, there's a special connection there. Heart, buddhic plane, ethers. The physical material form with its center at the base of the spine, the vital body working through the heart center where the life principle is has its seat. And that makes sense because the ethers are filled with the life principle. The activities of the body which are due to the stimulation are carried through the circulation in the blood. The emotional body working through the solar plexus, the head center, the direct agent of the soul, and its interpreter, the mind. So both the soul and the mind work through the head center. These four are in complete accord and alignment at the first initiation. Very interesting. At the first initiation.
But what's the threat? Are we still talking about harmlessness here?
No, harmlessness, we know. We definitely went beyond harmlessness.
Okay.
And we went into that part of the chapter which deals specifically with the lower light is thrown upward, the greater light illuminates the three, the specific part. Okay?
Yeah.
Floor of the triangle. Okay. So sometimes the base of the spine is said to be etheric. In Cosmic Fire, he tells us that. Base of the spine, etheric. Solar plexus, emotional. Throat center, mental. Heart center, buddhic. Head center, atman. He gives us that list around page 170. You'll find it there. And now he's giving us a different method of considering them within the lower personality. The heart is connected with the vital body. I think we can see why. The heart is the life. Vital body is the life. The emotional body, solar plexus, always head center. Yeah. Soul and mind. Okay. So this, and then probably for every initiation, certain chakras have to form a certain geometrical figure, I would say. Okay, maybe the case. Are we thinking lunar thoughts yet? I felt it. Let food be sought. Okay. Let rest be sought. Okay. Let restlessness. Okay. For each initiation, a different alignment and figure. For instance, what about the second initiation? Would these four do for the second initiation?
Would these four what?
Would these four chakras that we've just been talking about apply to the second initiation, or would we have to involve something else?
The heart.
Always the heart. Somehow always the heart.
The throat, the sacral and the throat.
Okay, well that's, that. Okay, possibly, although that's a very first initiation kind of thing.
Yeah.
Solar plexus, again. Solar plexus and heart, yeah. Yes. Yes. I think we're moving beyond the ether, so maybe we leave the base of the spine, the throat center.
Yes.
The head center and the throat center. And the throat center because you have to achieve what?
Mental polarization.
Well, almost. You're on your way. Okay. But you have to achieve spiritual intelligence and mental illumination. Mm-hmm. The illumination of the mind and spiritual intelligence. The throat center has to be involved.
Mm-hmm. And that would probably be the major center then.
The throat center is, yeah, as a matter of fact, it is. Heart is the first, throat at the second, yeah. Although in another way, it's sacral at the first and solar plexus at the second.
Yeah.
And if we went on to the third initiation, we couldn't leave the Ajna Center out of it, could we? No, that's the fifth ray in the Ajna Center. We couldn't leave it out, could we? Okay.
Do you think that these four centers have something to do with the circulation of the voltage coming through the rod?
I wouldn't. Yes. But because Sanat Kumara decides, you know, or knows what chakras in different vehicles to touch or to almost touch. You know, I mean, maybe he doesn't need to touch. And there is a certain geometrical configuration that he has to pass through. So he knows the exact science of it. Now, I would say so. Yes, I would say so. So when this is the case, the work of initiation and its interludes of active discipleship become possible. I like that. Between the initiations, you have to demonstrate interludes of active discipleship. You have to prove what has been conferred upon you. Before this time, the work cannot proceed. This is foreshadowed in the aspirant when there is an active, a symbolic happening in the light of, in the head, which is the forerunner of the later stage of initiation. So what we're going to do after lunch is we will discuss the light in the head. By that time, there will be no light in the head. Digestion will be in full swing. So we'll be very objective about this, I'm sure. So we'll do this after lunch. And then we'll get into rule number four. We have to do two a day. Okay. Yes.